So I'm going to get them started, but I have to go on record as being just so honored that the stage of Star and Screen, Dustin Hoffman, is here presenting to us today. Let's give Dustin a round of applause. You guys, it's all you.
Thanks. That never gets old, I'll tell you.
See, if you were not a speaker, I would say fuck you, but I would never talk to you.
You can still tell me, dude. You can tell your friends later. The only people that seem to get that anymore are either really old bank tellers or people not from this country. Like, oh, that a famous actor. Hey, thanks for coming, everybody. I appreciate you being here. You could be at any other talk right now, but you chose mine, so I am thankful for that. This is What the Watchers See, Weaknesses in Municipal Mesh Network Deployments. I'm Dustin Hoffman.
And I'm TK.
Wait.
What?
I got to talk about me first.
Do your things.
Okay.
Go.
That's right. I own and I'm also senior engineer at Exigent Systems. It's an IT services firm. I'm also principal at various other concerns. I also like to CrossFit, so if you have a Fran time, you want to come tell me afterwards. We'll compare Fran times. And this is my colleague, TK.
Yeah, I guess I'm a senior engineer over at Exigent Systems. We don't do the title thing too much, but that one seems to
we make them
to
up
work.
Every
yeah
August,
yeah we make
actually.
Them up pretty much every time. Yeah, I don't really have a whole lot other to say about that apart from being a principal at 3 Kappa Research, which is I guess a vulnerability thing that they were thinking about starting up.
Oh, it started.
Yeah, I believe it.
So, on with the actual talk. How this all got started for us was
all right, you gotta stop talking.
Excuse me for a second.
Oh shit.
Yeah. Excuse me for a second. We have a tradition here at DEF CON. These two are both first-time speakers.
Just me. I'll take both shots. It's all right.
All right. Well, we got one first-time speaker, so they're both taking it.
All right.
The tradition is we have a shot. We welcome new speakers by allowing them to enjoy a shot with us.
So I'm going to go on record. You do a much better job of pouring than Proctor.
Well, that's what I do. All right, cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Salud.
I'll take that.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, guys. Carry on.
Thanks. So how this all got started for us, obviously, in the post 9/11 world, a lot of municipalities are taking Homeland Security money, or really any money is available, amidst the time that they still have shrinking budgets. And they're using technology maybe to bolster an otherwise shrinking police force, or to provide some feeling of security, or oversight or surveillance across throughout their city. Like I said, this is primarily about municipalities. But in the city that we're often in, we started to see these camera pods, and there'll be plenty of pictures later, camera pods and directional antennas spring up hither, thither, and yon. And being the curious souls that we are, we kind of were curious about that. Who wouldn't be? At least I think everyone in this room would be. And in certain places, on my phone, it would be like, hey, there's an open Wi-Fi network available. And they had interesting names like Police Department. And this is before the era of, you know, FBI surveillance van 004, right? So this is you know, starting in 2008, 2009. So for me, that's how it started. He has his own unique interaction with these things.
So while drunkenly hanging around downtown one night, a few friends and I are wandering around, and we find this fountain that's downtown, and I decide to climb on top of it, which may not have been the wisest thing in the world, but I did that, and here I am acting like a clown, and lo and behold, a voice comes from above that says, "This is the police. Please get off the fountain." Which, and it sounded like it was probably about the 150th time that the guy had said that. But I, of course, look around in a scared, you know, daze, wondering what the hell's going on, and I see, oh, of course, the camera pod that Dustin was talking about, and I don't know, I guess I wasn't really all right with being observed sort of all the time, and so that's kind of what put me on to wanting to go look at these things and see what they were about and all that stuff. And then we did see, as you said, you could see that there's a wireless network available, even just walking by with like your iPhone or something like that.
And two-way audio and a number of other things that we'll cover.
Yeah, a little creepy.
So one of the first things I thought of after thinking about the fact that even in a relatively small town, our town being around 70,000 people, by no means a large city, I thought of this article that I'd encourage you to read. You can find it on Wired, called The Transparent Society. Has anyone encountered it or read it, Transparent Society? If you like science fiction, especially, I'm way into like dystopian post-apocalyptic science fiction, but this short story describes a society, two societies, one, both ubiquitously surveilled, but in one, basically only the authorities can view the camera. In the other, every citizen has equal access to all the video and how that might affect. And it's an interesting thought experiment. One of the things that I think civil libertarians and people like myself are concerned about with this kind of thing is that the information is so asymmetric that certain privileged people have access to it, but people like us don't. There's no audit trail. We don't know how people are using it. So those are some of the issues that we'll cover along with the vulnerabilities. You might ask, why are municipalities deploying such networks? Once you deploy a network, I often describe it to our clients as, well, when you have a nice network in place, it's like building a road. All kinds of other fantastic things can spring up alongside it. It's like a utility. Cities are using them to monitor traffic in intersections and on main and other roads, monitor public spaces. They have two-way audio. I know in the city, the specific city that we'll be talking about in our talk today, they use infrared sensors to monitor parks after hours. So you know, if you enter one of the city parks after dusk, you'll get the same ubiquitous voice. Oh, you know, city parks are closed at dusk.
They got a real nice video of some kids running away. Actually, they just like you see them look, and then they just scatter.
Which presumably is what they're looking for.
Yeah.
Frequently in the RFPs for these things, you'll see cities talk about, you know, we've got a shrinking police budget, and this is a force multiplier for us. It lets us be everywhere. Whether or not everyone is okay with them being everywhere is another question. I think of the automated speeding ticket robots, if you will, that they deployed in Arizona that the voters flipped out about, right, maybe rightly so, and complained about. But if you were speeding, these devices were parked on the side of the road, you've probably seen them, like, your current speed is this. And if you're going too fast, it blinks at you. These would actually just read your license plate number if you were going too fast and then mail you a ticket. So truly automated enforcement. So that's one of the reasons the cities are deploying things like this. The implementation is almost universally a mesh network. Why not a wired network? Nobody wants to trench. But like I said, the budgets are shrinking. So wireless technology holds the promise, at least to, let's say, a city council or some other budget committee, of a dramatically lower cost. I don't know if any of you have ever been involved with a project like actually stringing fiber like across streets or down city blocks. The licensing process and the costs are substantial. It'll easily exceed the cost of, let's say, the endpoint equipment like cameras and whatnot. You can also deploy much faster. Most of these things operate on unlicensed bands, 2.4 gigahertz, 5 gigahertz. These are not special unlicensed bands. Who actually does the installs? And I think this will be a key part of our talk. You have specialized companies that really focus just on municipalities and other kinds of government organizations. And the one in particular would be like Leverage.is. They have special qualifications, and basically they're able to fill out a really long, arduous RFP process and then meet other qualifications like, yeah, we've worked with cities before. So these tend to become the prime vendors in installs like this.
Not technical qualifications.
Yeah, they're not technical qualifications, as you'll see.
Not at all.
So, hey, first picture on their website is, you know, a smartly dressed policewoman presumably providing real-time response to real-time crime, including climbing on fountains.
She's scaring those kids.
And if you look at their vestigial Twitter site, which hasn't tweeted in like a year or two, they only follow other police agencies. So it's a specialized company built specifically to provide. The typical driver for this is police forces. That's who you'll see driving these kinds of camera installs. The implementation hardware itself, not terribly interesting. Things you've encountered, maybe just packaged differently. Specifically, we see a lot of this FireTide equipment, which is a mesh node vendor. They were recently bought by Unicom. You'll see normal cameras. I misspelled Bosch there, but it still pronounces right. Bosch cameras, normal DVRs. So here's some of the equipment we picked up off of eBay. It looks like this. Not really any special packaging.
It's our highly advanced lab.
Yeah, on the carpet. Yeah, super fancy. 2.4 gigahertz antennas here. A couple ports in the back. They usually stick these in outdoor enclosures. Nothing fancy. I mean, there's plenty of it available on eBay. We didn't pay a lot. We don't have a big budget for DEF CON. You can even, in fact, off eBay, you can buy some units that are licensed. I don't know if you can use them licensed, but they have radios to operate on actually restricted public services networks.
It's like 4.9.
I don't know. I think it's 4.9. So, information specific to FireTide, you should talk about.
Excellent. Well, basically, they're just little boxes, and as far as the people who are using them are concerned, they. In one end, you plug an Ethernet cable, and on the other end, you plug in an Ethernet cable. Magic happens, and the packet makes it over to the other side. We did kind of a small amount, and I actually have to thank a few guys from another company that I worked at who helped me out a lot with this, Jordan Hayes. And by the way, he did indeed attend the conference, so UCR can write that check. Vasilios and Lou the Shoe. All these guys, I don't know if I could have done it without them, or at least I couldn't have done my part without their help.
My favorite story, though, is they're like, hell, you want some help with this? Oh, for DEF CON, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
DEF CON 23? We're like, no, but this one, like in a couple weeks, so thanks for that.
Yeah, well, they really pulled it out. Well, really with these, honestly, you know, I'm losing my track here.
Just talk about the technical specifics, the file system and everything else.
We got as far as sort of taking. We reverse engineered a little bit, and we were able to find out a little bit of information. It kind of looks like these things are using something, like they're using. What am I looking for? Oh man, automated source routing or reverse sort. I don't remember the name of it. In any case, basically, where in every packet there's a header that contains like every single hop that the packet must take in order to go forward. And they added on some bits as well, I think, like signal strength to kind of help with their routing, basically, so they can make sure that it's a good system that, you know, automatically heals itself and all that stuff. And in this case, I think they just sort of relied on the fact that AutoMesh is sort of a trade secret. And I don't know if it's really a trade secret, but they deliberately made it a little bit hard to understand in the patents, et cetera. And I think they just relied on that as a sort of obfuscation rather than actually using security on these things. I don't know if there's anything really more we did in the RE department.
If you use any equipment like any embedded box, any small low power system, it's going to be very similar to this. Really, the only unique thing about FireTide as a vendor is specifically that they have a patented and proprietary mesh networking protocol that they call AutoMesh. It's certainly derived from other actual documented protocols. This protocol is not documented. A large amount of our time was spent with, as far as we know, the first actual decoding of the protocol. A full decoding of would permit actual interoperability, which we talk about in a bit. So typically you'll see with these deployments, like I said, 2.4 gigahertz, 5 gigahertz deployments, open standards. In this case, with Leverage, they deploy FireTide equipment, and it uses AutoMesh, which is, like I said, not documented. In all the city's documents, which you can crawl on their website, 2.4 is in use, but it's not mentioned. They only mention using 900 megahertz and 5 gigahertz. So it later makes me wonder, as you see the sloppy implementation they did, if perhaps they aren't even aware that the 2.4 gigahertz radios are turned on. Let me talk about mesh in general. I think it'll help for anyone who doesn't have a clear understanding on this. With any other kind of network, let's say, especially a wired network or a normal Wi-Fi network, you typically assume that a client node, let's say, you know, streaming video to my phone, that it has a reliable path back to the access point or the switch or to some other some other more centralized distribution point. With Mesh, you don't, and that's the advantage of it. All the nodes are peers. This peer may be actually able to talk to the backhaul, whereas this peer can't. So this peer will route its traffic through another peer to get to, let's say, the network DVR ultimately. And that's the advantage here. We don't have to string fiber all the way, you know, to the far end of the city. We can deploy multiple mesh nodes and make hops. So here in my first example with Wired, you see all five outer nodes have presumably a reliable, or at least a semi-reliable, link to the center node. In a mesh, nodes can route the traffic through other peer nodes. This is actually, if you were ever going to do anything malicious, just crawl the city's website, because the information they provide is voluminous and incredibly useful if you had ill intent. This image out of our slides is right off their website. It documents specific antenna placement, buildings they route off of. Is it terribly small? Oh, it is too terribly small. Oh, I'm sorry. Things you can't know before you get here. Where they actually describe, and we'll make the slides available to anybody who wants them. Apologies for the small images. You actually see the camera pods described and all the hop locations. And from this you can derive, for example, which antennas go where. Like I said, auto mesh in the deployments, not documented. They claim they have 19 patents on it to date. There are certain things that you can assume about it, that it's going to do a lot of the same things that all the other mesh protocols are going to do. Link health from node to node, other things like that. From reading many, many dry technical documents, we discover that it also embeds things like each node's particular altitude, GPS coordinates, presumably preset during install, or perhaps it actually has a GPS receiver. Things like this, which can contribute to the idea is that with auto meshes, you don't have to do as much pre-configuration prior to node deployment. Want to talk about the specifics?
For sure, yeah. So we set up our lovely lab on the carpet, as you saw before, and when we're looking at the traffic that's actually going out over the air, it starts out with kind of standard. I wish I could point at it for you, but I can't. But you can see at the beginning there's the standard issue 802.11 headers and all that stuff. And then additionally, there's an IP header, which is, of course, standard. And that points to, I can point. How about that? That points to here, which is the mesh IP, which is, it looks a little weird. It usually starts with a 1, but as far as I know, everything's normal about that. The protocol set to Proto-134, which is allegedly for RSVP, for the end-to-end ignore kind of packet, which I don't know too much about that, but I know that what follows is not, in fact, RSVP. And so then we move on to the header right here. This is what actually follows that last IP header. And this is what I think is the auto mesh header. And you can see right at the beginning there that the F9, I believe that's the mesh ID. There are only very few.
There's only 256 possible mesh IDs. Auto mesh uses this specifically to identify which mesh, let's say if you had multiple meshes deployed in the same geographic region, which mesh this node is a part of. This is part of AutoMesh's secret sauce. This is one of the few things that you define prior to deployment. It's worth noting that AutoMesh, because it isn't documented, and we'll talk about it later as well in more detail, we believe this is part of what most of these deployments believe provides some of the security that they think they have, specifically that it's not documented. And you can't load up, for example, a packet capture in Wireshark and get very far because it chokes on AutoMesh. At this point, Wireshark does not have a decoder for AutoMesh. Be really cool if it did. One of our goals was to, you know, to help that along. How many people use Wireshark? It's super helpful, right? And to be able to decode all these protocols, yeah, it's great. Yeah, it chokes on this specifically because there's no public definition of what the protocol does.
And it's not, we haven't entirely decoded it here, but we can see that there are a couple fields that are probably flags and stuff like that. And actually, the next one is this right here is a unicast frame. And there's just not very much information included for the auto mesh part, but this is a broadcast frame, and I think what they've done here is they've attached a little bit of information, but maybe some flooding for getting routes and stuff like that. And you can see that right after the mesh ID, it's now the last bit is 1, which means it's almost always a broadcast. I was not able to find any packets that had that set at 1 that were not broadcast. And then you have a couple like TLV values here. I'm pointing again at the screen like you can see me. There are a couple of TLV values here where you can see it's a presumably a type and then a length, and then you know you've got whatever this might be, which I think is, like I said, probably some routing info. And then there's this chunk that comes after that, which I assume is, again, the path that it's going to take. I notice within here, you can see repeated several times, you know, some spots that look like they might be IP addresses. And these right here are definitely the IP addresses of external, or they match actually the external IP of that first IP header that we looked at. So I assume that it's represents the ID of the node that we're entering in, perhaps. And then it goes to a multicast address, which I assume has something to do with the routing. Conveniently, they've left for us... Oops, didn't mean to do that. Conveniently, they left for us a little marker at the end, a little kind of EOF type thing that you can use to just sort of strip this out entirely, which for when they have it unencrypted, as they sometimes do, and in our lab, of course, there's an easy way to just skip all the auto mesh stuff and go right to the payload so you can look at it. Like, we were able to send some packets across our little setup and just pull them right out of the air, which kind of takes away their safety from the obfuscation there. Yeah. And then this is just an example of something that was passed over it. It's just, this is a CDP packet. Not much to talk about here other than you can see that it's in the clear after the auto mesh header is done with.
So our specific case, thanks for sticking through all the background. I'd hate to skip ahead and not have everyone appreciate sometimes the folly that you see in these things. In this specific city, you see we've mapped out there's apparently, how many cameras are there actually deployed in this small city?
Oh, something like 122, I think.
And that's not including what they have deployed over all the school sites. The city and the school district have apparently joined hands, and they've kind of aggregated all their camera feeds together. So just in the small city, the primary collection here is downtown. This is kind of the downtown. This is where the infamous fountain is. Oddly enough, from the time the initial RFP for this system was released back in 2006 until literally 72 hours ago, the entire system was unencrypted. So no WEP, no WPA, nothing. Everything was sent in the clear. So, you know, friends, there's a lot of things that we can't know in life. Like, one of the things I'm still trying to figure out is, does the Malwarebytes logo, is it actually supposed to look like a Wu-Tang Clan? The world may never know. But in this case, I'm gonna try and put myself as best I can from servicing other IT clients and put myself in the shoes of the city manager and maybe the people who did the original install. My best guess is that they were under the assumption that AutoMesh alone would provide the security because it was obscured, because you couldn't just load it up and read it right off the, let's say, without additional effort. It was secure enough. I think this is part of the problem with when we use words like security. I don't know about you, I feel like the word security is very ill-defined. I think Bruce Schneier said it best in the opening to his Applied Cryptography book where he said there's two kinds of encryption in the world, the kind that keeps your kid sister from reading your diary and the kind that keeps multinational corporations and governments from reading your diary. And I think it's the same thing here. I have to wonder if at the end of the install, if the, you know, the QA manager, I'm being very generous, assuming there is one, didn't look at the form and go, well, is it secure? Yeah, it's secure. We're going to check that box. Or it's a matter of, well, I turned the knob and the door didn't open. Yeah, but if you lean on it a little, does it pop right out? It's kind of one of those things. And I think as taxpayers, especially as you go to the next slides, you ought to cringe because this was all tax money. This is all something that you and I came out of our pockets. And here we are, frankly, ill-served by, I was thinking of this morning. I thought of the Obamacare website, right? How shoddy government contractors provided, presumably took a lot of money and provided maybe a not a great product. I feel like you'll have shades of that repeatedly as we go through the next slides. But 72 hours ago, WEP was turned on. Yeah, so yay for government efficiency, right? Was it because of our talk that was going to, I don't know. I'm going to say it was, though. I'm going to just go ahead and take credit for it. Dustin Atike, moving the bar of security forward to 1999.
Yes, one peg at a time.
you should read these later. Okay, so here's what you'll commonly see. These are the camera pods watching you. Here's a loudspeaker, right? Here's the little all-weather enclosures. Lots of directional antennas. When you see things like this, right, I get nervous. I have to wonder if, those directional antennas will provide us a lot of security, right? Because they only send that signal to one other place. I wonder if you could think back to when you didn't know as much as you know. If you did things that looking back, you'd be like, oh yeah, that was a really bad idea. That didn't work out quite as well as I thought. Because I have moments like that. When I started the company that I run now, I look back and go, that was a really bad idea. Not at all safe or secure. And maybe you just got by the skin of your teeth. I think that may have been what went on here too, right? Hey, we've got auto mesh. It's obscurated. No one can read the video streams. We've got directional antennas. No one else is going to see Redlands police pop up on their phone as an open access point. I think we're good here, guys. And there's one of the FireTide boxes right there, in another enclosure. But vendor names here,
great
maybe
idea.
Not the best idea. They were installing another pod right by our office, and they had some vendor out, like a bucket truck. And I stopped to take pictures because he had the door open to this thing. And that guy got all upset about it, and he shut the box on me. I was trying to take pictures with my camera. Here's the highest point in the city, this 8-story building, festooned with cameras. And this is the high point that they all route it back to. You can see these things are hopping up everywhere. This picture makes the city look really bad, by the way. Don't vacation here.
They did put cameras everywhere. I mean, come on.
This is more cameras, more PA devices.
Trees.
I'm not sure what I find more obnoxious, the cameras or the PA thing. The being yelled at by a city official or a police department.
Yeah.
This sign makes it all okay, though, because you have given notice that it's under surveillance by the police department. I think they have run afoul, though, of the notice, have they not? Did you not tell me this recently? You mentioned some of this.
Well, I can't say for sure, but I want to say that this is not sufficient.
You have to have these notifications a lot more places than they have them.
And it's not exactly downtown, either. It's kind of like on one of the ways that you can get into downtown and nowhere else.
I've never seen this sign, which is weird. So, as it was until 72 hours ago, which is not fair that I got here. They changed it just before we came, so I'm still smarting on that. Here are the security problems and the potential issues with having it as is. And when you have one vendor doing the install, right, they've got a playbook. And I'm confident you'll look around and look at the other places. Because when a company like Leverage gets a government contract, they croon about it. They're going to tell everybody. It furthers their prestige in the small community that they're in. Santa Monica, for example, has a deployment by them. Other cities larger than us. So, assuming, like smart people like us do, that directional antennas and an obfuscated network protocol is not enough, at the minimum, and I'm going to date myself, but I was saying this back in in 98 at my last corporate gig, that people are going to deploy wireless networks not realizing that it reaches beyond the walls of their office building or their home or other places like that. All of a sudden, you have access to the transmission medium, right? Before, with a wired network, you'd have to go and put a tap on it. That's at least harder. Wireless gets in places you didn't plan on. And that's exactly what we have here. Another one, how many of you have ever gotten, this is my favorite, and I'm not sure what to do about them. I typically play along like a rube, but how many of you have gotten that call where it's like, hi, this is your bank center calling, and there's been fraud on your account. Can you go ahead and read me your 16-digit card number? Yeah, I have, and I'm worried there's fraud, right? So I probably give it to them. Was anyone here at the talk the gentleman gave, and the name escapes me, it deserves more recognition than I'm going to give it, but where they impersonated a GSM cell tower? Right, there's all these warnings outside the door. None of you were here for that? Okay.
A few.
The lights are bright, okay? They don't call me eagle eyes. Great talk. And what was the key thing I took away from that was that you don't have both parties authenticating the other, right? The phone has to authenticate itself, dutifully authenticates itself against the tower, but the tower does not have to authenticate itself as a legitimate tower. You have the same thing here. With this setup, buying eBay hardware, you could, even just through ARP spoofing, a much dirtier, simpler method, you could easily become a node on their mesh. All you have to know is the mesh ID, which can be read right off the right off the air. That mesh ID, and there's only 256 unique combinations here. It's 8 bits. You read it off, and you can join their network. You can participate. And what can you do with that? Well, if you're a member of the mesh, remember, in a mesh, presumably because it's wireless, the health of the network is changing at any given time based on, I don't know, fog or all kinds of weather conditions or other electromagnetic transmissions in the area. One node can report to the other nodes on the network, hey, I've got a great view from here to the backhaul. Got fantastic signal strength. Y'all should route all your traffic through me. And let that sink in. A rogue node on the network, unlike a wired network, you'd have to be in just the right position, right, to sniff the traffic. Not so with a mesh network. You could actually have all the traffic routed through you just by issuing a favorable packet, saying, I've got a fantastic fantastic link to that last hop that you need to get to the city's DVR. I don't have to sit and sniff just with the cameras that I'm in range of. I can actually just request all camera feeds to be fed through me, or VoIP traffic, or whatever other city services is present on that network. All the equipment presumably also supports encryption of their own transmissions, cameras, the audio, the infrared transmitters. All of those do, never turned on. Like I said, using a directional antenna to secure the medium, simply not sufficient. If I'm picking it up while I'm driving around, something's gone wrong. Some of you may have worked with actual optical transmitters where you shoot a laser, to another to make a wireless link. Well, you'd actually have to get literally in between the two access points the transmitter and the receiver to pick it up. Not so here. Antennas leak in directions that you're not prepared for. I mentioned content encryption. A fantastic feature of FireTide, and I don't want anyone to think I'm knocking FireTide. I really actually feel bad for the city, and I'm really putting all the blame on the implementation vendor. FireTide boxes actually support mesh node authentication. You can actually, via PKI, via certs, you can actually have one node authenticate itself on the mesh to all the other nodes. It's really fantastic. Not turned on.
They didn't check that box.
Yeah, that box didn't get checked, apparently. Again, auto mesh or any other protocol to obfuscate. I really got to check my
obscuration.
Don't look at my typo. Simply not sufficient. So really what we've seen is a completely botched implementation. And isn't that what we often see in security? Security's hard, is it not? What do we see? Was OpenSSL, was SSL itself actually broken? Certainly not in the Heartbleed incident. Certainly not. What was broken? The OpenSSL implementation. Someone screwed up. Someone thought that managing memory that way was a really great idea, and it wasn't. Someone thought that doing something a novel way instead of a more proven way was a good idea, and it wasn't. Someone here thought that they could, because of other things in place, that it was sufficiently secure, or they thought that security wasn't a concern at all. We'll never know. So really, this is really at the feet of the integrator. In some ways, it's fun to knock, your local cities or governments or whatnot for like, oh, buffoons. But really, we put so much in the hands of private companies who take government money and are supposed to provide a service. I presume the mayor pro tem of a small city like the one that we're dealing with here, that guy's in, you have to feel bad for him. He's in no position to evaluate the security of the finished product. Any more than my grandmother is, should be knocked for going, oh, honey, you got the whole internet on your phone? I mean, what do you expect from her? What do you expect from someone like a city mayor or a city manager? They depend on the integrator, who they paid substantial sums of money for. A nearby city was paid $500,000 for something like a handful of cameras. It wasn't really related to the talk, but it was a very recent award for their proposal. $500,000. Will they get better security? I mean, it's 2014. I hope so. Is anyone in the city actually capable of evaluating it post-install? I don't know. I doubtful. These are small cities. City of LA, City of Chicago, City of New York. Big cities like that? Sure. I would imagine so. Is there even an IT department? Is there anyone who can do a post-install test? One of the things that I often talk about just in terms of providing IT services to our clients is, do we test it in ways? Okay, here's a personal anecdote for me. Back in the days of going desk to desk as an IT lackey at my last corporate gig, whenever I set up a new computer for an employee, I would always forget to install the printers. Probably because I don't really print anything. I don't have a need to print out a lot of paper. I never really have. But these people do. I don't understand. Our clients print more than anybody I've ever seen in life. And if that printer isn't there, I'm going to get a call immediately. In the same way, I feel like we often assume in the security world, here's another one. Filtering services based on IP, right? Only certain IPs on the network can talk to this service. Did anyone actually test it from an IP that's not in that whitelist? Did anyone actually test it? Thank you. That sign was clear as day. Thank you. I was nervous about missing that. Did anyone actually test it? I presume. I'm guessing not. I think that's what I call the hubris of IT people. Guilty right here. Presuming a lot of you, if we do some self-reflection, we'll also see that we're all guilty of it. Hubris that we know what we're doing. We've done it a few times, a lot of times maybe. It's worth checking. I know residents are upset that they're being monitored all the time. They aren't thrilled about it, but I saw a comic recently that said, how do you want to sell this to the American people? And it was a gift wrap, and it was like protecting children or fighting terrorists. They sold this in terms of public safety, and from there, the public was satiated sufficiently enough, we quieted enough voices that the system got rolled out. Now there's ubiquitous surveillance. I'm guessing people wouldn't be happy if they found out that their sister's brother's kid could watch all the cameras too. Or, perhaps much worse, going through these potential threats beyond just the security weaknesses. So here's some of the things that we theorized and tested in our lab. So these things work on a flawed implementation like this. Big warning here. Federal and state wiretapping lawsuits may apply. So I'm not a lawyer or an accountant, so seek the advice of someone who would know about these things, like the EFF. Don't go running afoul of wiretapping laws. So clearly we've talked about in a flawed implementation like this one, prior to 72 hours ago, observing video streams is trivial. Or because they're multicast, you could just subscribe yourself. Why not? Like with any wireless system, but especially one that you can actually participate in the network in a meaningful way, there's deniable service opportunities. Simply by flooding, crude jamming, oversubscribing, these are normal off-the-shelf cameras, nothing special here. They're not prepared to have 1,000 bogus subscription requests. How about ARP spoofing? You could actually become a node on the network. Or actually become the DVR, or what they often term the network video recorder. Dirty. Dirtier, though, and totally worthy of a doge, is joining the mesh legitimately, like I said. There's only 256 mesh IDs. All you have to do is, you don't even have to guess. You can just read it and go, oh, this is mesh number 3. I'm mesh number 3. And now you're, as far as anyone can tell, you're a legitimate node on their network. I'm guessing that there isn't a lot of separation between these the cameras, the network DVRs, and the rest of the city's networks. They've left themselves wide open to anyone who can listen or participate in the network with accessing services that they simply weren't prepared to have public access to. And honestly, guys, for the police department, you ought to start thinking about things like the reliability of evidence or documents. I'm not a lawyer, but it would concern me that potentially evidence could be tampered with from 50 miles away.
Well, you're basically plugged in. You may as well have walked in.
You may as well have plugged in. Absolutely right. Yeah. Found a hot port in their office, and you can participate on the network. Video manipulation. Yeah, think Ocean's 11 or any spy movie. I think every spy movie has something like this, where you've got the board, you've got the board security guard with all the video monitors, you know, and it's the middle of the night, and he's watching, and, you know, and the guys you're supposed to root for, I suppose, take over one of the video cameras and play back a loop. I call the all is well loop, right? An empty corridor. Whereas in reality, when the camera cuts, right, you know, all our good guys are, you know, making their way down the corridor. Entirely possible through what I call the UDP increment attack. Video is usually transmitted via RTP, which are UDP packets. And this is how it would work. So this is my illustration from this morning. You've got a municipal camera communicating to the municipal DVR. The 100.101.102, these are packet numbers. These are which simply are incremented after, as the next packet is sent. Remember, this is UDP, and this is key. With a malicious node, thank you. With a malicious node sending their own UDP stream of RTP packets, all we have to do is jump ahead. So if the highest packet they're on is 106, I'll just jump to 200. My video packet is now 200, 201, 202, 203. Think about what happens next. The DVR goes, whoa, I'm still getting some packets that are way out of order. These are dupes, or they've expired. I can just ignore them. I've literally now, just by incrementing the UDP count, have just taken over, and the DVR would now trust. It has no reason not to, right? It's functioning as intended. Because we're using UDP, we can just throw away all the packets that are. Now, these packets, this 100, these packets will continue to arrive, and they're always ignored. Because, say, somewhere along the line, right, it happens. If you watch enough network traffic, you see things like this happen. Packets arrive out of order. It happens. What do you do with UDP? You discard them. So you can just with this, just by incrementing the UDP count, you can completely take over the network. And here's the other danger is the cameras are trusted. I mean, you could do all kinds of tomfoolery, like, you know, hey, let's have Godzilla walk down the street. Right? I mean, there's all kinds of things you could do. Or you can do things like project that all is well at the Citibank, but in reality, it's being robbed. Well, I'm getting calls, but I don't know, Frank, I'm looking at the camera and everything looks fine from here. A bunch of pranksters, hooligans. You can also do the opposite, send police resources elsewhere through injecting false, faulty data like that. Not to mention, look, I've got a friend who works at, I don't want to identify him. I know someone that works at Verizon Wireless, and what he tells me is, oh, yeah, you know, there's people that look at all your dirty texts. So, yeah, and there's someone that sits in there. Someone has access to them all. Or a couple weeks ago at the NSA, right? Well, that's the problem with having 20-year-olds work at the NSA is that everyone's looking at everyone's, you know, dirty pictures. Who do we trust to look at all this data that's been collected, that's archived? These are privacy implications along with all the weaknesses that go along with it. Things that maybe not everyone's thought deeply enough about. Security is complicated, and it interacts with things like privacy and policy and other government things. I think sometimes we often think of ourselves as just tech people and not often enough as citizens that have to participate in, frankly, in a 2014 world. So our demo is sad because of WEP, because...
we can't break it.
Yeah. The person who writes the checks is now actually thinking, because we ought not try, because of potential liability. So I know we promised a demo, and I'm very sorry. But thank you for coming and filling this whole room. I think it's always a speaker's concern that, when I spoke 2 years ago, there was a really, really, really great talk at the same time as mine. And so I walked in with all these people here, and they all bailed out, like half of them, before I started. So thanks so much for your attention. If anyone has questions, we're going to be out front.